You are listening to the Punk News Podcast. This is a very special, very exciting episode. We've got Harley Flanagan of the Cro-Mags, Harley Flanagan of the Stimulators, Harley Flanagan of the brand new documentary, Wired for Chaos. And we're going to talk about all that, and we're going to talk to Harley in a second, but we're going to open up with a song, and then we're going to talk about that song, and then we're going to work our way into the documentary. This song is called All Fuck You Up, and I really want to talk to Harley about this song. So this is off 2016's Cro-Mags album by Harley solo, if you will. Yeah. This is All Fuck You Up, and we'll be right back.
Your dad, tell those fools what up.
I'll fuck you up!
And we are back. Harley, first of all, thank you for coming on the show. It's an honor to have a legend, an architect, and a really funny guy on the show. So thanks for coming on.
Bro, you're killing me. I love this already.
Well, listen, Harley is an amazing guy. Actually, I should mention this off the bat. There's a brand new documentary out. It's called Wired for Chaos. I watched it today, last night and today. Fantastic. There's going to be live showing starting June 15, running through July 17. Here's the cities where you can catch it at. I'll be at Philadelphia at Philomoka, which is an amazing, Harley, I don't know if you've ever been to Philomoka before. Amazing concert venue and film thing. It's going to be awesome. Everyone, if you're in the Philly area, go to Philomoka. But here's the cities where you can see Harley's new documentary. You can see New York, Portland, Santa Ana, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, Tempe, Austin, Philadelphia. I'll be there. Minneapolis, Chicago, Somersville, running June 15th through July 17th. Definitely. I mean, and Harley, I think you're going to be at all those shows or most of them, correct?
I think I'm going to be at all of them. You just named so many, I couldn't even keep up with you. But yeah, I mean, I'm doing a movie tour, which is kind of weird. You know, I'm used to touring as a band. I'm actually going to Europe on Monday, and I'm getting home the same day that the first showing. So I'm like getting on a plane and literally dropping my bags at home and going to the fucking movie theater. So it's like that.
Well, definitely go see this. The documentary, actually, I'll talk about the documentary first, then I'll ask Harley a question. The documentary, to me, is very interesting for at least two main reasons. The first main reason, it's a real dissection of what makes Harley be. Harley's one of the most fascinating guys in punk and music in general. It's a real dissection of Harley's psyche, what made him be him. It really is a deep dive into Harley. Harley also has a really cool autobiography, which I highly recommend. I would say that there's not a whole lot of overlap in that the autobiography is kind of, you know, I was in the Misfits for a little while. I was in Murphy's Law for a little while. Here's what happened in the Cro-Mags and so forth. Whereas this really focuses on what makes Harley be Harley, which to me is as fascinating or even more fascinating. Also, I'm not going to give them away, but there's a couple of revelations in the documentary that I believe are not discussed in the book that blew my mind. And I'm not going to blow it. I'm just going to say there's one regarding a baby that blew my mind and really talks a lot, shows a lot about Harley's character. And actually, I'm going to quote Ian MacKaye. Ian MacKaye says, despite Harley's heavy armor at his heart, he's a really good guy. And I agree, after knowing Harley a little bit, I know Harley and I've interviewed Harley a few times. We're not like pals, but I've interviewed him a few times. And I've seen him a bunch. And the documentary is really, I mean, I'm not trying to make this a puff piece, but it really is an excellent documentary. So Harley, kudos to
you. Thanks. So I wish I could take credit for any of it, but you know, I was literally just the subject. You know, I had nothing to do with the editing. Obviously, there was a lot of interviews with a lot of people. They had well over 150 hours of interviews. So, and I wasn't present for like any of it, except for the few moments where you see me interacting with the people. So I personally really didn't know what the hell it was going to be. And I knew it could go just about any direction because obviously I've, you know, fucked up a lot in my life and I've made a lot of bad decisions and done some shitty things, which I own. I don't pretend otherwise, but, the movie kind of touched on all of it. And at the same time, you know, I think it, you know what, I hope I didn't wind up coming off like an asshole. And I hope it explained a little bit about why I may have made the bad decisions and the mistakes that I made in my life. And hopefully, I'd like to think that it might give people who've been through some of the things I've been through or similar things, it might give them a little bit of hope when they may otherwise feel like they don't have any, you know?
Well, actually, I'm glad you mentioned that. As you mentioned, you hope you don't come off as an asshole, and I don't think you do at all. I think I think it goes to show that behind that, there's a full person behind, not everybody, but almost everybody. There's more than a full person behind Harley. And what I will say about this, there perhaps is the temptation to do a documentary. Harley's the greatest. He created hardcore. He created NYHC. He's the best. This documentary is not that. Rather, it's kind of talking about Harley's growth and a lot of his struggles that he's been through. So I think it's really well done that way.
Oh, well, thanks. You know, I honestly, the guy who directed it, Rex Miller, I wasn't familiar with any of his work, but when I wound up, I saw this film that he did, Citizen Ash, which was about the tennis player Arthur Ashe. And it was such a good film. You know, and I don't know jack shit about tennis. And I remember Arthur Ashe. I remember the name vaguely, but I didn't really know his story. And I'll tell you, I saw that film and I was like, wow. I walked away not only feeling like I saw a great film, but I actually felt like I learned something. And I felt that it was fascinating and it really pulled me in. And it was about a fucking tennis player who died of AIDS. And I'm like, wow, if this guy could get me totally pulled into a film about fucking tennis player, he's gonna make a good fucking film, because I got some shit to work with, man. And you know, and I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to suck my own dick here when I say I've got shit to work with, but I've been privy to a lot of things. I was around a lot of heavy hitting people, you know. My life was not normal, to say the least, you know. And so I mean, if you check out this film, you will see some, you know, somewhat interesting, crazy shit, you know. I can't sugarcoat it. The shit's fucking nuts, man. Wait.
Yeah, well, it definitely is. And like I said, a lot of the film delves into what makes Harley Harley, which is why I want to reference this album for 2016 called Cro-Mags, which if you haven't checked out, I mean, it's probably unfair to say, oh, this is my favorite record by an artist, but I think 2016 might be my favorite thing that Harley's ever done, because it's very short. It's like 20 minutes long. It's very artsy without being pretentious. It's got like three or four instrumental tracks, which I think is very bold and interesting. But one of the most interesting tracks to me is a song called "I'll Fuck You Up," which I believe is Harley's son in the beginning that says, "Dad, tell him what's up."
And yeah, then, he was 4 years old.
There you go. And then all Harley does is he plays one riff for just about 1 minute. And to me, and Harley, feel free, if I'm way off, tell me I'm way off. Is to me, I think that song is such an artistic and interesting track, because to me, between the riff, which isn't even that complex of a riff,
yeah,
it's got that extremely unique, actually one of a kind Harley tone that's got, you know, the meat and the power, but also that first wave punk swing to it. And to me, what that the point of that track is, this is Harley saying, this is what I am. This is what makes what I do special or interesting or unique. So I'm curious as to your opinion on that track, which is a one of a kind track. It really is a unique. There's no other punk song like it, frankly.
Bro, I love how deep you just went into it. And I wish I could say I was being that thoughtful. I was literally just trying to express the feeling of being mounted on someone and punching their fucking face until it's flat. Like, literally, the riff is just, and that's my fucking fist connecting to the ground on the other side of your face. That's what that is.
See, and that just goes to show, like, how art, especially even hardcore, when done so well, is to me, it was, this is Harley, me laid bare, while and from Harley's perspective, it's the other way. It's like, this is what I'm going to do to you, which I think is,
well, it was really kind of like my, that's what I was expressing. It's not so much that I was, that's my way of doing it to you without doing it to you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, as you could, you saw the film, you know, and without fucking sugarcoating or bullshitting, like, music saved my life. It saved me from who the fuck I am, you know, from everything I've been through. And fortunately, I've been able to express and release a lot of my aggression through it. And that's why my music sounds the way it does, you know, because it's an extension of what was in me my whole life and what, you know, that rage that I had that kept me going through my life. It comes out in my music. I mean, these are all things I'm working on, you know, as I'm getting older. But that's like, you know, my music is an extension of the streets that I grew up on, the thoughts that are in my head, the sounds around me, the feelings I have. And that record, I remember when I wrote it, Brutal Simplicity was something that I saw written on a book cover. And I was like, that's what this record has to be. I just want the riffs to be brutal, simple, and just fucking crush. I want to make it a old school as far as the songs are going to be super short. They're just going to come in, fucking smash you, and be over before you have the time to even react. You just got hit by a train. Bam! And so that's how I went into that record. And it was also around the time that I was going through the whole Webster Hall thing, which was very traumatic. You know, I mean, I went to... a fake Cro-Mag show to, in my mind, try to extend the olive branch and wound up getting jumped by a bunch of like fucking wannabe tough guys, like gang members or whatever the fuck they were. I got, you know, led into a room and jumped by like 5, 6 or more people. And I wound up going to Rikers Island. I got stabbed with something. I had like 40 something stitches. I put 3 of them in the hospital. So, I mean, it was an intense fucking period of time when I did that record. I was like, so that music, that was what I was feeling right then and there. But whatever you got out of it, that was the intensity that was coming out of me. That's one thing with me and my music, man. There's never been any goddamn thing fake about it. Like, it's coming from genuine experiences, genuine feelings. And I know, and I'm always trying to push the envelope a little bit. I mean, my ingredients have always been the same, you know, as far as what I cook with, but I'm always trying to come up with new ways of putting things together, new recipes, same cuisine, but different shit, you know.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to ask about the documentary next question, but this question leads to what you just said is, we had Roger Merritt on the Punk News podcast maybe 2 or 3 months ago, and I'm going to paraphrase Roger. So, internet, don't get mad at Roger for what I'm about to say. I'm paraphrasing what he said, and go back.
Well, I love Roger, so it'd be really hard for me to get mad at him.
So I'm saying, you know, people like to say, oh, right. I'm saying I'm paraphrasing Roger, listener. So this is not exactly, but basically he expressed some disappointment in that perhaps modern hardcore lost the art aspect of the original wave of hardcore, which came from punk rock. To me, you have always included that art aspect. And I'm just curious if you have an opinion on that or not, you know.
I don't really have an opinion on it because I never really thought about myself in that way, but, or, I do understand what he's saying as far as I don't agree 100% because I've heard a lot of bands recently that I think are pretty fucking good. I think there's a lot of new things happening musically that are kind of interesting.
Who do you like?
To be honest, I can't remember a lot of the names, but because there's so much shit going on and I'm kind of burnt. I mean, I've been on stage and playing. I've probably seen a few thousand shows in my life, but like, I mean, I remember playing with Turnstile before they kind of blew up, and I remember thinking to myself, wow, these guys are fucking good, you know, then, like, before they were the next big shit. I was like, wow, these guys, and it wasn't that they sounded like a regular hardcore band, but there was something familiar about it. It had the same type of energy, and, you know, but it was different, and I liked it. So, for me, I see new bands all the time that I think are, that there's something exciting about their show or their sound, or they're doing something that's similar but different. And that's what I look for, you know. That's when I notice. If they're doing something that's slightly like different, maybe a little bit more pop-ish or whatever the fuck, because I get tired of the same tough guy bullshit over and over, because quite frankly, I never wanted to be a tough guy. Life made me tough. If I had had a different surrounding, I probably wouldn't have wound up being as aggressive, or I don't even like using the word aggressive. Maybe defensive. I think my aggression and violence started defensively, and just at some point, you turn into something else. You can only see so much violence before you become kind of numb to it, you know?
And actually, that leads right into the documentary. And there's a portion of the documentary where you refer to this. Of course, the documentary is called Wired for Chaos. And so this is kind of a two-part question. Let's imagine that you were born in rural Kentucky, or something like that. Do you think there would still be kind of this, maybe to a lesser degree, this history of violence? That is it in your DNA, or was it taught to you through your surroundings, or both? Like these conflicts from your earlier years.
Well, it's. I think most things are learned, Now, I started learning. We all start learning while we're still in our moms. We're already hearing and experiencing and feeling, and I was already experiencing violence then. And, I was already experiencing drug abuse and drug use then. And from the time that I was out of her, I was looking up at it, watching the adults go through it. So there never really was a time that I didn't experience madness, which is why the film is called Wired for Chaos. It was actually just something that I said in the film. I was like, I was wired for chaos before I was born, or whatever. I said something to that effect. And I think most behaviors learned, do genetics play a part in things? I'm sure they do. But whatever problems that my parents may have had were also mostly learned. So, obviously I have their genetics. I look like them both. To a certain degree, I probably respond and behave like them both a little bit. But they would have probably been very different too had they had different lives. So,
I don't know, man. I'm going to quote one other person. I interviewed Buzz Osborne of the Melvins recently, and he hates his hometown. He hates it. And so I said to him, well, in retrospect, are you glad that you grew up there? Because that's kind of what made you, and maybe that's what made you special. And his response was, well, if I was born in L.A. or New York, I would have had a head start and I'd be better than I'm at right now. So your background, that, is that a part of the high levels of Cro-Mags and Harley Solo kind of stuff?
Well, that was kind of two different things. I got thrown off by what you were saying about him, because I don't know if I agree with that. I think that that may have been part of what made him unique.
Yeah.
Had he been in New York or LA, he might have just been another dude. He might have gotten overshadowed by dudes who were more interesting. But because he had time to be where he was and develop who he was, I think he probably came in to town with more of his own thing, which was unique. And before you said, you think I would have still turned out the same had I been raised in wherever the fuck? You know what? There's trauma there too. Mm-hmm. And to think that there's that one place or one family has the monopoly on trauma and suffering is ridiculous, because every family has trauma and suffering. My life was just, it was what it was. It was interesting. It was unique. That's why there's a fucking film.
There's some very, I would say, exposed moments in the film where you really talk about some of the negative experiences you've had throughout your life.
Oh, yeah.
Was it difficult to I guess, see that played back to you? Was it cathartic and that you felt better? What's it like seeing all these things? And also, but like, you know, we talk about the tough guys and, you know, in hardcore and punk is, I think a lot of so-called tough guys won't talk about some of these things because they're afraid of being seen as vulnerable, where you seem willing to talk about these very delicate issues.
Well, because I don't feel vulnerable, because I know that despite what happened to me, I'll still kick most people's ass. So, I mean, you know, it doesn't make me any less of a man that things happened to me when I was unable to protect myself when I was a child. You know, you can't really control things around you, you know? I mean, and quite honestly, most of the extremely crazy and aggressive and violent type people that I know all went through fucked up shit as young kids, you know? I mean, I'm assuming you're probably talking about, like, you know, sexual abuse and shit like that, because that obviously really, a lot of people were taken back when I started talking about all that shit. Honestly, some of the most crazy, violent, like, prison fuck you up people that I know got abused when they were kids. I think that had a lot to do with making them as dangerous and as callous as they became. Because at some point you draw the line and you say, nobody's going to fucking ever hurt me again. You know, I'm not going to fucking... And the things that push you to that place are usually so fucking bad that you already, let's just put it this way, you already understand the level of violence at that point. And, you know, I just talked to, it was kind of, it wasn't like I got ambushed in the movie, but it was just like in, some questions came up in conversation with, actually with a good friend of mine, Sasha Jenkins. And I was just at his wake today, which was really intense. But he asked me a couple things during, I actually walked in when they were interviewing him at the documentary, and I was like, oh shit, blah blah blah, and I just started talking to them, and they just let the camera roll, so they wound up catching some unplanned things, and that's how that whole thing came up, you know. And you know, I guess what am I trying to say, it's if you don't address the things that hurt the most, they just they can shape you into a really fucking angry, bitter, depressed, fucked up person. You know, I started going to therapy and seeing a shrink around the time we started making this film, because I knew that I was going to be touching on some heavy things, and I just wanted to get out in front of it. Because, you know, I knew it wasn't going to be easy talking about a lot of this shit. And I knew a lot of things were going to come up. So just the process of making the film was super cathartic. You know, from the time that we started it to the time we finished it, I had a lot of therapy and this and that. So it was like I was kind of going through it in real time all over again. You know, so it's an intense film. You know, I mean, for those of you who don't know my history, you know, I've known a lot of really famous people, a lot of really influential people. My mom was, you know, she was wild. She's, you know, I was going to shows since I was born. You know, I don't even remember my first concert. I started touring in bands playing with adults when I was like 10. You know, I've known everybody from, you know, David Bowie to you name it in punk rock and hardcore. And my mom was best friends with like everybody from the 60s and 70s, the Beats and all the, you know, I just grew up around insanely influential, crazy people. And the downside of that was most of these people were fucking crazy. You know, most of them were on drugs. And, you know, there was also a lot of, you know, sexual fucking madness going on.
Well, speaking of Harley's early band, let's play Stimulators track and we'll come back. This is the A side of the single, Loud Fast Rules. Harley's on drums on this. His aunt Denise plays on it as well. Yes. And we'll be right back. Think of, well, if the listeners don't know, Stimulators, kind of important, kind of notable, very fast, early punk band in NYC. Harley was the drummer when you were like 12. Is that when you started drumming?
Yeah, that 45, I was 12.
And then, but before that, in Europe, you were in a band called Little yeah. Big Boss. Are there any yeah. recordings of that or live audio of that or anything? Man,
unfortunately, there are not, but it probably would, we probably sounded like, Crass or something, like before Crass, you know. It was just like very noisy and not the greatest musicianship, but it was punk as hell. It was totally fucking punk.
Do you remember like any other bands that you might have shared a bill with Little Big Boss?
Oh yeah, we did several, about three or four shows with the Bratz, which was Hank Sherman, who was the founder of Merciful Fate. That was his old punk band.
Wow.
I actually think that King Diamond was at one point the singer too. I don't know, because he wasn't singing with them when we played with them. But so yeah, I played with Hank Sherman's old punk band, which, you know, for metalheads, that's like, you know, it can't get much cooler than that. You know, so but that's where I started out, was playing drums with Little Big Boss, and then I started playing with the Stimulators. I joined the Stims in early 79. I replaced the drummer from the Dead Boys. What was his name?
Johnny Blitz.
Johnny Blitz. Yeah, he was.
Oh, I didn't know he was in this. Wow, I didn't know he was in the scene list.
Yeah,
wow.
No, he only did like, I think he did like one show and he didn't make the other one. I think he was fucked up on Smack or some shit. And they were trying to find him for the gig and they couldn't find him. So I knew all their music and Denise was like, well, Harley, you're playing drums. And I was like, okay. And that was it, man. That was it. Fucking got it going, man.
I was pleasantly surprised that the documentary kind of focuses a lot on the stimulators. Often the stimulators is kind of a footnote in Harley's story or when people talk about Harley, but the documentary spends a lot of time on the stimulators. I'm interested, what's your relationship like with your aunt Denise? Is there that kind of aunt paternal protection? Oh, or is she like a friend? What's your relationship like with Denise?
Dude, I'm fucking 58 and I still get 50s in my fucking in the mail on like, you know, Christmas. She still sends me money, you know what I'm saying? She's still my fucking aunt, you know? Like that. I'm like, Denise, I'm fucking 58 fucking years old. You can stop sending me fucking envelopes of money. But no, you know, she's old school. I just saw her fucking last week.
Well, that's pretty cool. Also, yeah. there's a bunch of early footage of you, I guess, with the stimulators in Ireland during the Belfast gig. And I noticed at that point you have kind of like an English accent or something like that.
Yeah, you know what it is I grew up in Europe from the time that I was like 3 till 10. So I was learning how to speak English from Scandinavians, you know? I mean, think about it from the time of think about your language, how much it changes from the time you're 3 till the time you're 10. At 3, you're not talking that well or that much, right? I mean, you know, 3-year-olds don't have a huge vocabulary, right?
Right.
So I was learning English from Danish people, mostly, because I lived in fucking Denmark. So I didn't fucking sound like a normal American. When I moved back over here, I had a fucking weird accent. It was one of the reasons why kids used to pick on me and fuck with me. Because, like, not only was I a punk rocker, which, you know, didn't serve me well in my neighborhood or in school, but I also fucking talked like a weirdo, you know, because essentially I was learning how to speak English from Danish people. You dig what I'm saying? So they had,
yes,
you know, so how the fuck do you think I'm going to talk?
Another thing about the documentary overall is it focuses on Harley the person as opposed to focusing on stimulators or Cro-Mags. It's not the story of the Cro-Mags. It's the story of Harley. I actually was, I guess, pleasantly surprised by that too. Was that like an intentional decision or that's just how it came out?
I have no idea because I had nothing to do with making the film. I didn't actually see it till it was done, which was fucking nerve wracking. Yeah. So the only thing that I saw when they were in the initial making of it was like they started putting together trailers for like what they, the concept. And the first two that I saw, I was like, dude, no, like that's, and we actually had to like seriously go in and do it. Deep dive with the director and really educate him on all these things. He didn't know much about the history of punk rock or the history of hardcore. He didn't know anything about fucking hardcore, you know, and he knew little about punk rock and he didn't know jack shit about me, you know, but he's a really smart guy. And when he goes in, you know, so once he got it. You know, and all his editors, again, same thing. Once they got it, you know, these people are all really fucking talented. They were all really good at what they do. I mean, and there was, you know, we had archivists in this thing who were like digging up footage and digging up photos. That footage from Ireland, that riot footage is actually from our show. I remember that fucking riot. What you see on a film is only a small part of it. It was fucking way bigger. I guess the cameras fucking took off before the shit really fucking hit the fan because, and I remember that and I'm like, oh shit, how the fuck did we get footage of this? Like, I was shocked, dude. And they even got footage of the fucking squats that I used to live at, like the Vats in San Francisco. Who the fuck had footage of that shit? You know, so I was beyond I wouldn't say pleasantly surprised, because it's not a fucking pleasant film, but I was totally fucking shocked. You know, I was shocked. And I got to say, you know, they told the story pretty fucking well. I mean, obviously, certain things, you know, you have to condense a lot of shit to fit, you know, a whole lifetime into an hour and change. You know, so there's parts where I'm talking about this, and it may be you think I'm talking about that or whatever, but at the end of the day, it all makes sense. And it does tell the story pretty fucking well. You know, it's like you lose a lot of the smaller details, but the big picture is pretty fucking, it's accurate. You know, I gotta say they did do a good job as far as that goes. But it is weird to see your life play out.
Hold on, I just have a few other questions for you. I'm going to ask you one more heavy question, and then some, I guess, esoteric questions, because people want to know. The documentary talks about kind of the conflict in Cro-Mags, but it doesn't make that the central part of the film. And I'm going to pontificate on your behalf, and you can respond as much or as little as you want. Is I find it quite admirable and quite impressive that if you ask me, you know, there's been a lot of conflict in the Cro-Mags. The conflict, it seems, is mostly settled or entirely settled. And Harley, since the conflict, has put out some incredible albums, has proven that he's an amazing songwriter and performer. And I feel like you've, quote, I don't know if one is the right word, but you've overcome that conflict. And I wonder how that feels, that at the end of the day, you're kind of standing tall. And you can respond as much or as little to that as you want, you know.
Well, first of all, thank you. You know, I guess if there is a winning or losing in this whole thing, I did win, you know, I guess if there, you know, but as far as resolving things and or whatever, settling, you know, I don't feel like it ever really was. I tried for many years. I think this is, you know, if people do the looking and the searching, they'll see plenty of times over the last 20 years that I've publicly tried to bring all the quote unquote old guys from the first lineup to the table, you know, to see if we could, if nothing else, you know, resolve something. I mean, let me put it this way. We could get the rights to Age of Quarrel and Best Wishes back, because they were recorded within a certain amount of years ago. So if three of the original members were all to get on board and say, we want the rights to this music back, we could actually get those albums back and release them again, and everybody could get a piece of the work that they put in. For those of you who don't know the history, we all got completely robbed. Nobody made any money off those records. Okay, I would do that in a heartbeat. And I have actually for years, like I was just starting to say, I've been trying to see what it would take to get all these fucking guys to get together in a room and just get on stage, even if it was just once. You know, because look, at the end of the day, I'm a fan of music. I wanted to see Black Sabbath get back together for fucking years. And when they did, I was lucky enough to see it. And I was fucking thrilled. I was super fucking pumped when the Misfits got back together. People could say what the fuck they want. Money, grab this, that, whatever. But I don't give a fuck. First of all, they deserve whatever money they get. I don't give a fuck. Everybody else gets paid. Why the fuck shouldn't they? I would get together with those guys and get on stage because, you know what? I don't even have to really... I don't agree with anything any of them say. I don't believe the same things as what they believe, and I don't give a fuck. At the end of the day, if we're able to bring happiness to, let's say, thousands or even hundreds of people, just by getting on stage and not having drama with each other for fucking 35 minutes, it's only a fucking 30-minute record. You know, if you can't put your own ego and your own bullshit aside for 30 fucking minutes and get up on stage and rock out together to make all those people happy because you are so fucking bitter, then guess what? You got a serious fucking problem, dude. You need to get a therapist then. Okay? And if these motherfuckers can't even get together to get the rights to our own music back so that we could share the fucking money that we could make off of it? Wow. Can you imagine being so bitter that you won't even get together and say, look, I don't want to play with you. I don't like you. I don't even want to see your face, but let's get the rights to our shit back and split it up and everybody just walk away and fuck you. These motherfuckers can't even do that. You know, so, hey, man, whatever, man. My life is great. I got an amazing family, an amazing wife, an amazing life. The guys in my band that I'm currently playing with are actually my friends. And there is no fighting or bickering or back and forth. You know, they play the songs, we go out, we tour. They want to do it. We're having fun. So, you know what? Life goes on, man. Those motherfuckers can sit and be bitter all the fuck they want, man. Life is too good, man. I recently just, you know, decided, you know, even with some people that I had real drama with, man, even some of the people that I got jumped by and blah, blah, blah. I'm putting my anger down, man. I've been angry long enough. I just don't need to carry that load anymore. You know, granted, you know, I don't forget. I don't forget shit, but I'm putting my anger the fuck down. Now, if somebody wants to come to me with violence, well, they better believe they're going to get some. But they're not going to get it with. They're not going to get it because I hate them. Because I just don't have the fucking time. Life is too goddamn short. I'm putting that shit the fuck down.
Well, there is some powerful closing words for the interview, but I got to ask one final question, then I'll let Harley go. But those are some powerful words from Harley himself. Very, very zen, if you will. And I think well positioned. Last question, Harley. New Cro-Mags music. Is it in the cards?
Bro, I'm fucking in the studio. I was tracking vocals yesterday. We got two songs that are like 90% done, ready for singles. And 9 songs tracked. They're just not done. They don't all have lyrics, but the album should be done soon. There will be at least 1 or 2 singles before the end of this year. There will be a new album next year, and there will be something else very special next year as well.
Well, that sounds real rad. If the listeners haven't seen Cro-Mags live, now is the time to go. I've seen them like 4 or 5 times live since the 2016 album. They're awesome live. They play Age of Quarrels stuff. They play Best Wishes stuff. They play some of the new stuff, which is some of my favorite stuff. So definitely check that out. Also, go to or check out wiredforchaos.com. You can see the trailer and, of course, see the documentary live with Harley there in attendance, cool. Starting in June, running through July. East Coast, West Coast, check it on out.
Yeah, man.
All cool stuff. Harley, any closing words before? I think considering what your powerful statement just now, I think we should close out with I Come in Peace from 2016's Cro-Mags album. Any closing words for the listeners? Anything you want them to know?
I just want you to know that I am really, really excited about being alive. You know, it's been a struggle. I've spent so much of my life just, you know, poor, hungry, angry, fucking, and I finally feel like, you know, life is fucking great. And, you know, I just want to tell people, man, there was times I really wanted to give up. I really don't know how I even made it through it, but I kept going, and you don't know what's going to be in the future. So even when you're at your worst, even when you're at your fucking bleakest, at your loneliest, at your absolute weakest, I tell you, you cannot throw in the towel because you do not know what the future is going to bring you. You don't know. You could meet somebody amazing that could change everything. Something could happen. You could have a brainstorm, a revelation. You just don't know if you give up. So don't ever fucking give up. Please take it from someone who has been through hell and back. You have the strength no matter what you're going through. That's about it, man.
Powerful words from Harley Flanagan. This is I Come in Peace. Thank you, Harley. And be sure to check out Wired for Chaos in the theaters.
My brother, thank you for having me.